Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. In previous talks, I've been emphasizing the practice of samatha, of samasamadhi. In the last talk, the previous talk, I talked about samadhiti, the right view, the right understanding. And I thought it would be appropriate to mention that the path, that which we're supposed to be practicing and developing, has got other factors as well. It is an eightfold path, and sometimes if we emphasize one factor over and above the others, you'll find that developing that one factor by itself sometimes isn't successful. It's an eightfold path, and so each one of these factors has to be developed alongside the others as both supports and as results. And in particular, I thought I'd just start this evening's talk with the second, third and fourth factor on the Eightfold Path, being that which we call right thought, right speech and right action, because these do create a very important support for the arising of quiet, concentrated, blissful states of mind. This is that which we call like right action of body, speech and mind. And if one isn't cultivating right action of body, speech and mind throughout the day, throughout the night, then one will find that the other factors of the Eightfold Path will be weakened and will not be able to arise in their fullness. In particular, as this wasa, this rains retreat, has an emphasis on the attainment of jhanas, that these three factors are important supports and foundations for the arising of those states of mind which we call jhana. The coarsest of those factors is just the right action. And sometimes if you look in the suttas, the right action is just keeping precepts, not killing, not stealing, not committing adultery. But here you can look at right action in a bit more deeper way. But if it's any action which is based on lobha, dosa or moha, the three defilements, that is, any action which is based on desire, delight in the sensory world, craving, these are all in the realm of lobha, or its opposite, dosa, ill will, the negativity of the mind, or if it's coming from moha, delusion, then this will make the action a wrong action, a wrong action of body. And similarly with speech as well, that if the speech is coming from those three roots of lobha, dosa and moha, the three kilesa, then it will be a wrong action of speech. And those wrong actions of speech and wrong actions of body which we can perform during the day will hinder the attainment of any jhana. It is actually, the mind is something which can go two ways. It can go out towards the world. And this can be the meaning of that word in Pali called asava, the outflowing. Sometimes they translate it as kankas. These are literally the outgoings of the mind, the mind which is seeking for something to delight in, to amuse itself in, to be interested in, to be concerned about outside of one. And the meditator can feel that force of the mind, that inclination of the mind to go outside and spend its time being concerned and caught up with the things outside. But the mind can go another way as well. It can go inside, it can withdraw into itself. And it's the kilesas, the lobha, dosa and moha, which propel the mind to go outside and be concerned with the outer world. And being concerned with the outer world is going for delight, possession, craving, control, and the things outside. Wanting, this is not quite right when your wants are frustrated and one gets into aversion and ill will. These are things which will oppress the mind, will tire the mind, and will stop it attaining one-pointedness, will stop it attaining samadhi, will stop it entering jhana. And so this practice which leads to jhana and these three factors is like pulling the mind in, withdrawing it from the outer world, and especially with like speech and bodily action. Any speech or bodily action which is motivated, which is has its source in these three defilements or kilesas, will be a hindrance to the attainment of one-pointedness of mind. And even if it's like bodily actions such as like slumping when we're supposed to be meditating, or sleeping too much, or any action of the body which you perform in your hut, or any action of the body which you perform, say in the eating hall when you're eating your meal, if it's coming from these three defilements, these three kilesas, is going to be a hindrance to the attainment of samadhi. And so one can look at this factor of right action, this fourth factor on the Eightfold Path, and to see if one's bodily action can be improved upon. Even like walking too fast, instead of like walking slowly, mindfully, carefully, can be like a wrong action. Even like brushing your teeth, you know, too hard or too soft. Anything which is going to be done from greed, hatred or delusion, you can look upon this as being like a wrong action. And any speech which comes out from these three roots, from like desire for something, craving for something which you don't really need, or any negativity which comes out when you get disappointed or frustrated when you don't get what you want. And these are things which are also going to obstruct one's meditation. And in fact, because most of speech, not all of it, but a lot of speech is motivated by the kilesas, sometimes it's better to not speak at all. Or at least, if one is going to speak, to find out where it's coming from, first of all. To have enough mindfulness and enough sampajanya, or this wisdom element of the mind, to know why one is speaking, where it's coming from, and where it's going to lead to. And if it's coming from defilements, from lobha, dosa, moha, then have right effort, samavayama, and stop and cease, don't say anything, to avoid unskillful speech arising, to block it out, to stop it, to say no, to abandon it. And that way one will be weakening the defilements. When you act upon the defilements by body or by speech, you strengthen them. When you go against them, you weaken them. And as you know, sometimes weakening the defilements is a struggle. Weakening the defilements by saying no to them is something which is hard to do. And much of the practice of a monk in his hut is like saying no to the defilements and fighting against them. a defilement which says, oh, I've meditated enough today, now is the time to sleep. A defilement which says, you know, I want another apple today. A defilement which says that, you know, I really deserve this last tub of yogurt, not the people after me in the line. All these defilements we have to say no to. We have to fight against them, and then we weaken them. And again, right speech and right action is an important part of gaining samadhi. And if one's samadhi is yet weak, if the jhana hasn't arisen yet, then it's worthwhile looking at one's speech and one's actions. But of course, all speech and all action originates from this second and very important factor of the Eightfold Path, right thought. I don't know why it is that whenever I read commentaries on the suttas, they always seem to put that right thought in the realm of wisdom. Whereas to me, it's for many years now, I've seen, having studied the Vinaya, the Vinaya, the monk's rules, you see that really right thought, the second factor of the Eightfold Path, and really it comes more, it belongs more in like what one does, what one says. Because if the thinking is coming from lobha, dosa, moha, if the thinking has its source in the defilements, it will almost always, eventually, lead to wrong speech or wrong action. And indeed, the only way that one can really perfect speech and action is by perfecting their source, and this right thought, this movement of the mind which forms intentions, which forms plans, and which quite often verbalizes those plans or puts them into action. And if the thought isn't pure, if the thought is with defilements, then the bodily speech and actions will also be wrong, defiled, and will be a hindrance to one's meditation. And so that is why the meditator has to give enormous emphasis and careful attention to the second factor in the Eightfold Path of right thought. And right thought is consistently defined as thought which is without lobha, without like this greed, this sensual desire, and without ill will, and without this sense of wanting to harm and hurt. And so that when we are meditating, when we're not meditating, we have to put a guard on the door of the mind. We have to have this mindfulness and also a right effort together, working as a pair, informed by right view, samadhiti. And when they're working as a trio, all together, the three of them, samadhiti, sammasati, and sammavayama, are the right view, sammasati, the right mindfulness, and sammavayama, the right effort, working on the mind, it can notice like wrong thoughts arising. Now, a thought of desire, a thought of greed, a thought of wanting something. And if it can notice this, that samadhiti will tell the mind that this is not going to be conducive to one's goal, to one's aspiration. And sammavayama will eradicate it, will cut it off. So these three factors are important here when we're watching the mind. When we're watching the mind and guarding the mind, we should know that whenever a desire for something arises in the mind, especially if it's a desire for something in the realm of the five senses, something which is in the realm of like karma loka, the world of the five senses, that we should know that this is not going to lead to our happiness, this is not going to satisfy us, this is not going to lead to any fulfillment at all. We should have enough wisdom enough samadhiti to know that much. So one can actually look at the process of desire. This is looking back on it after it's happened, and to realize, at least even logically, that as soon as a desire occurs, as soon as it arises in the mind, until it is fulfilled or abandoned, in that space of time, one is separated from what one wants. And that, the Buddha said, is dukkha, it's suffering. As soon as a desire arises in the mind, from that time until the desire is fulfilled or abandoned, throughout that whole period, one is in dukkha. And if that desire is satisfied, then what happens? Only another desire comes up afterwards. The mind gets tricked into thinking such desires are attainable, and another desire arises afterwards, and then the moment that desire arises, until it is fulfilled or abandoned, one is separated from what one wants and desires, and that, the Buddha said, is dukkha. Let alone if one is frustrated, and we all know what the frustration of desires are, and that is dukkha. And so one can see, just even inferentially, logically, rationally, by using the intelligent faculty of the mind, that as soon as a desire is formed into the mind, that one has accepted suffering. And that's why the Buddha said that he who delights in the pleasant objects of the six senses also delights in suffering. And you can see how this works. And so when one realizes that what this lobha does to the mind, it should give one the incentive to say no to it, to restrict it. And as I've said many times, the way of restricting lobha is to restrict it in the realm of the five senses, first of all, and give it play in the realm of the sixth sense. In other words, that one restricts it in the realm of pleasant sensations of the eye, the ear, the nose, tongue, and bodily sensation or touch. To realize that the pleasures of those five senses are not worth very much compared to the pleasure of the sixth sense. And that pleasure of the sixth sense is the pleasure of jhanas. And this was one of the paths, or the path, which the Buddha taught in order to abandon the karma loka, and to develop the joy based on the concentrated mind, the sukha which comes from jhana, the paviveka sukha, the sukha, the happiness born of seclusion from that world of the five senses. And once one has cut off the realm of the five senses, and one finds one's delight in the sixth sense, that too is lobha as well. But then that's a very easy step to cut that last strand of lobha off and become fully enlightened, become arahat. It's cutting off the lobha which is connected with the world of the five senses is the hard one to do. And you can see that lobha connected with the world of the five senses operating. It is that the concern for that world outside, it's a concern with one's heart, with one's what we call bhavikan in Thai, one's possessions, the things one has in one's heart, the things one really thinks one needs, the journeys one is going on, the monastery one is living in, the friends, the people visiting or not visiting, the things which are, whether it should be this type of incense or the other type of incense, whatever it is concerning the outside world. You can see how much time this can take up in the mind. You can see how much energy it consumes, and that is all the karma raga, this being caught up in the world of the five senses. And this is the reason why that in this retreat, this rainy season retreat, I'm emphasizing cutting off as much as possible the lobha, the raga, the desire, the lust, the delight in that world out there. And so that once one can cut that off, the path is open, the time is there, the energy is there for the mind to seek its happiness, to seek its delight in the world of the sixth sense, in jhana. And so the one has to watch the mind, especially the thoughts. And when one is watching the thoughts, one has to have the ability to say no to them. If it's a thought of sensuality, where it's like the start of a fantasy of lust, where the fantasy of desire, an old dream, an old memory, sorry, or plans for the future. If you really wish to enjoy the fruit of samadhi, if you really want to know what jhana is like, you have to say no to these things. You have to cut them off. Otherwise, that just sitting there cross-legged, you may have a straight back, you may be sitting very impressively, but if the mind is still dwelling on what they call karma vitaka, the thought which is involved in the realm of the five senses, even though you may not be opening your eyes, you may not be listening with your ears, you may not be conscious of touch or smell or taste, if your mind is imagining these things, then you're still in the realm of karma. You're still in karma loka, it's still karma raga, it's still karma vitaka. Lobha is still in that world of the five senses. And it will be impossible for you to enter jhana from there. So we have to somehow establish this guard on the door of the mind. Very similar to just imagining just a big fellow on the door of this hall, a huge guy, very fierce and tough, who as soon as he sees, you know, the delight or the seeking for pleasure or the seeking for distraction in the realm of the five senses, as soon as he sees them wanting to come in, he says a very firm no, no way, you cannot come in here. This is not what I'm spending my rains retreat for. If you really want to, if it's very hard to say, you know, keep out, you can say, well, just keep out for the next, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, until the end of the retreat. For 7 or 8 weeks, I'm going to keep you out. Then maybe afterwards I'll let you in. Only if for 7 or 8 weeks you've kept them out. You find, actually, if you've kept karma vitaka out for 7 or 8 weeks, there's no way that you're really interested in having them in afterwards. So we have to be able to manage to keep this guard on the door of the mind, especially to make sure that, like lust or desire, even in thought, does not take hold of our mind. Now again, this becomes a battle at first. It becomes a battle because our mind is being conditioned into seeking its delight therein. There's delusion in our mind. Awija tells us that this will be fun, this will be delightful, this will be a wonderful way to spend 5 minutes, 1 hour, or a whole day, or a whole lifetime. We need to have a little bit of wisdom, first of all, to realize and to understand that this is not going to be for our benefit, this is not going to be for the benefit of anyone else. This is just delighting in suffering. Do you want to delight in suffering? It's not just delighting in suffering now, but it's giving rise to suffering in the future as well. If you give in to the defilements of the mind, they become strong, and it makes it harder the next time for you to say no. But saying no now, no matter how hard it is, makes it easier the next time to say no. You're developing the strength of the mind, the strength in renunciation, renouncing the world of the five senses. And we have to do this, we have to get that strength of mind. It doesn't matter how hard it is, we have to say no, 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 no. Otherwise, whenever will you develop jhana? Whenever will you develop magga and pala? Whenever will you gain the goal of the holy life? And who does develop the goal of the holy life? You may have seen those monks who have developed magga and pala, who have developed jhana. You may know some of them personally. You've got to know them, got to befriend them. And you should know just how they have reached that state. They have reached that state through effort. They've reached that state through saying no to the defilements of the mind. As one monk pointed out a week or two ago, in one of the suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha said that he divided his thinking into two. Those thoughts which were unwholesome, which were akusala, and those thoughts which were kusala or wholesome. And this was still when he was not fully enlightened, when he was a bodhisattva. So this would probably be very early on in his striving as a samana. Not just on the night before his enlightenment, but it seems this was a long time earlier. And he would always strive to abandon the unwholesome thoughts in his mind. Any thought which was connected with lust, which was connected with sensual desire, which was connected with the world of the five senses, the concern for that world, the involvement with that world, and that world includes one's family, one's possessions, all that sort of stuff, he would abandon, he would let go of, he would cut off. And any thoughts which were kusala, which were wholesome, which were conducive to the goal, then he would encourage those, he would make much of those, he would develop those, maintain them, guard them. And this is how the Buddha practiced. And you can see that this is setting the foundation, this is clearing the path, this is preparing the way, so that when he did sit under the Bodhi tree, that he had no trouble at all gaining jhana and then gaining insight and full enlightenment. And it's very important to remember these experiences of those who have gone before, of those who have been enlightened, and why they were enlightened, why others weren't. It's because that they have cultivated right thought, informed by samadhiti, mindful with samasati, and with samavayama, cutting, avoiding hot and wholesome things, developing and guarding wholesome qualities. So if in our practice of meditation so far we have found that sometimes we get concentrated, sometimes we don't, sometimes that we have the peace of samadhi, sometimes it seems far, far, far away, look to see whether one is practicing right thought, whether one is cultivating this quality. Remember, these eightfold paths, the Buddha said, are bhavetabhang, to be developed, to be made become, to be made grown, to be cultivated, like one cultivates a field. So we have to cultivate this. It's not something which comes of its own. It comes through the practice of careful effort, through diligence. Again, every effort to cultivate, every effort to say no, no matter how hard it is, every effort to say mindful, every effort to practice right effort means it makes it easier next time. Every moment of diligence is a step further towards the goal. And every moment of heedlessness, of giving in, of yielding to the defilements is a step backwards. And at this time in the retreat, one does really need to get the motivation going strong. It's very easy at this particular time of a retreat towards the middle to get discouraged, to give up the effort, to stop the striving which is necessary to attain things. I mean, the Buddha kept on saying that one should meditate as if one's hair was on fire, as if one's turban was alight. Because one doesn't understand just, one doesn't know just how much longer one would have this opportunity, this marvelous opportunity to spend so much time alone, to have the support, to have the quiet surroundings, to have everything, at least most things, just pushing you along, helping you, supporting you, encouraging you to develop these states. And it becomes a very helpful reflection, a very useful thing to stop and spend some time remembering one's death. Remembering that one is subject to old age and sickness, and that one will not always be as strong, as fit and healthy as one is now. Even if one is already sick, later on you're going to be much sicker than this. So this time has to be used wisely. Like, this time has to be valued. This is special, this is precious time, this is the rains retreat. Please, please, please don't waste this time. You'll only look back later on and regret and feel so sad that you missed a marvelous opportunity. Thoughts like that, remembering the passing of time, remembering your rushing towards your death, whenever that will be, really help one say no to wrong thought, really help one to get the strength and the incentive to restrain the mind from following defilements. Every moment is valuable, so no moment can be given to greed or to lust. No moment can be spared to get given into ill will just because someone said this or someone did that which frustrated what you thought was appropriate. You have not got the time to waste. Also, it's very helpful to develop the feeling of gratitude to all those who have given you this opportunity, who can't themselves, for one reason or another, spend such a time in a monastery like this. The people who feed you, the people who built your hut, the people who give you your robes, the people who strive to buy this land in which the monastery is in. Sometimes on my walking track or on my meditation cushion, I think back to, where did this meditation cushion come from? Who built this track? Now, where is the energy with which I walk coming from? It's coming from all those donors. Am I worthy of this meditation cushion? Am I worthy of this meditation track? Am I worthy of the food which I'm giving in the morning? I'm worthy if I'm putting forth effort. I'm worthy if I'm saying no to the defilements. If I'm giving in to them, I'm not worthy. I shouldn't be using this. To train oneself in that way is helpful. It brings up the sense of shame, the hiri otapa, which is very important if one is to develop the mind. Are you ashamed eating the food given by these people who come here expecting so much of you? Are you ashamed using the hut and using all the things which people give to you? If you're heedless, then one should be ashamed. It's a very noble and very helpful and very actual truthful and honest response to what one is doing, if one is indeed heedless, if one is giving in. This is a struggle. This is a fight. This is almost like a war against the defilements. And that's a very useful way to look at it. The defilements will not give in easily. Mara, this being, is always ready to trick, to deceive, to get you entangled and involved in the world of the five senses. At this particular time, you have to be strong and say, no way, Mara. This is the time I'm going to develop jhana during this range retreat. If you've got first jhana, I'm going to develop second jhana. I'm going to develop third, fourth. And you're not going to stop me. I'm not going to get involved in all of these things. I'm not going to think of all of the nice times I had in the past. I'm not going to think of my old girlfriends. I'm not going to think of my wife. I'm not going to think of the time when I was a child. I'm not going to think of the time after the rains retreat. In the future, next month, next year, I'm going to set up the guard of the mind. And I'm going to make that guard very strong, fierce. No to anything which isn't conducive to the path. If I fail, I'm going to feel ashamed. And that shame is going to make me try harder next time. I look back upon all the support I've been given. And if I'm going to take this support, I'm going to use it, I'm going to try my hardest. As Venerable Jnana Wimala, the very impressive monk in Sri Lanka, said, I only listened to one talk from him. I only actually saw him for about 2 or 3 hours, but he made a great impression on me. And he used to say, or he said, that if at the end of the day that you look back on what you've been doing since you got up in the morning until the time you go to bed at night, and you realize that you did your very best, that you used your time as wisely as you could, to the best of your ability, that you put forth effort, you practiced samavayama as best you could, you developed sammasati as best you could, you developed sammasankappa, right thought, as best you could, to the best of your ability, then that was a day well lived, a day when you were indeed worthy of the robe you're wearing, worthy of the alms food you've eaten. You've tried as best you can. Even though you may have failed, even though you may have had lapses, but if you tried the very best you could, you can go to bed at night, go to sleep, with that feeling of satisfaction of having tried your best. However, if you, in the evening, you look back upon your day, and you think, well, I could have done more, I could have said no, I could have restrained myself more, then you should go to bed ashamed. Go to bed thinking you've wasted opportunities, you've wasted chances. And this chance is indeed rare. The opportunity to gain enlightenment is there, you've wasted it. That's real dukkha. That's real bad karma. That will create great suffering for one in the latter part of one's life and later on. So this is a way of motivating oneself. Without that motivation, without that inspiration, without that encouragement, one will not have the strength needed, required, to achieve jhana or to achieve magampala. These things are called uttari manusatamma. Uttari means like higher or superior. Superior manusa, superior than the world of men and women. These are the dhammas which are above the world, which are superior to the world. And so they're not going to be attained easily, just slackly. Not anyone is going to attain these. They take this special effort, this special encouragement, this special dedication. One makes a goal very clear, what one wishes from this retreat, jhana or magapala, and then making that goal very clear, one has developed this And say again, the four Idipadas, one has developed Chanda Samadhi, this clear will, this clear intention. This is what I'm going for, and nothing's going to stop me. Mara is not going to stop me. This is what I'm going to attain. And as I said before, what I found the most important of the four Idipadas is the Samadhi, Chanda Samadhi. And once one knows what Samadhi is, being the sustaining of the mind on the nimitta, on the object, sustaining the attention on it, keeping it there for long periods of time, that's what Ekagata means. That then one understood that Chanda Samadhi means arousing that intention and maintaining it there, keeping it there. And it's at this time of the retreat when that maintenance of the goal, that keeping up the effort, can sometimes be difficult. The original intention may have faded. One may have achieved something and then slackened off or achieved something again. But it's the maintaining of this chanda is important. Keeping it going. Don't let up. 12 weeks or 13 weeks. 89 days of wasa. Every day counts. We maintain, keep up the pressure, keep up the dedication, keep up the intention, the will, the aspiration to achieve what we set out to achieve at the beginning. That's Chanda Samadhi. It takes effort, it takes energy, it takes dedication. We set up that Idipada in the mind, and once we set it up, we don't give in until we reach our goal. Chanda Samadhi. And Virya Samadhi, to maintaining the energy. You should all know by now, the energy, once you start bringing it up, sustains itself. Once it gets going, it keeps going. It's just getting it going is the hard thing. The energy, it takes effort, it takes striving, it takes pushing. But once a person gets that energy going, it becomes so much more comfortable, so much more pleasant to live the monastic life with energy, with effort. Again, energy comes through training, it's developed. And it's developed through the application of will. Once that will is applied again and again and again, sustained, energy arises. And that energy fuels you, supplies the mind with the power to perform its task, to say no to the defilements, to cultivate right thought and all these other factors. And this Idipada of Chitta Samadhi, this maintaining the mind, the thought process, the movement of the mind towards its object. It's as if the mind can be pushed, can be urged on to the goal. And this is what one is doing here, urging your mind, in this particular case, onto the jhana nimitta. So one can attain this, and one has to continually urging the mind on to the goal of samadhi. Not just once, one has to maintain that movement of the mind, that urging of the mind, that pointing of the mind onto its object. Otherwise, if one just allows the mind to drift, it will never get anywhere. Allowing the mind to drift will be encouraging the kilesas, and they will become strong. And then we've got vimamsa samadhi, this ability of the mind to investigate, to find out, to know the ways, the paths, the byways of the mind, so that one knows the area around one's goal, One knows the locality, one knows the vicinity, so that one knows how to reach one's goal. Maintaining that sort of that investigative aspect or function of the mind, again, empowers the mind to succeed. So these are the ways of success. In this particular situation, success in samadhi. This is the way that people in the past have succeeded. This is the way the Buddha succeeded. And so if one wishes to succeed, this is what one has to do. So one knows what one needs to do. All that is left is to perform that task to the best of one's ability. As I've been said to, I think, one or two people earlier this week, developing jhana, what one is doing is creating the causes for the arousing of jhana, for the arrival of jhana. All one can do is like make the causes. It is as if like jhana is a person, a very noble guest. Then one cannot just go out into the street and try and pull that guest into one's house. What one has to do is to clean up one's house, to make it pure, spotless, clean and inviting. If one's house is clean, inviting, spotless and just right, then jhana will come in by itself. And so when one is developing the mind, one has to keep looking at the causes and make sure the mind is well prepared, that one is just watching the object, that the mind is calming down, it is mindful, there is effort there, there is all of the iddhipadas working. And if the causes are established, then the mind by itself will tend towards jhana, will go towards jhana, will move there, and one just watches as the mind enters and dwells therein. And this is so important to have these experiences. Again, jhana is not the end of the path. Jhana is not the goal of the path. But it is such an important factor of the path. For those of you who have achieved some sense of jhana or samadhi, you just know just how malleable, workable, soft and powerful the mind is after it has entered samadhi. And anyone who has had that experience of knowing that soft, malleable, workable mind knows that the mind which hasn't had samadhi is just so hard and so unworkable and just so stubborn and resistant that it's just almost impossible for such a mind to gain magampala. But the mind which is soft and workable, it's as if it can do anything. And there, that mind is what one uses. That's a powerful mind. That's a way, the most likely way, that a person will get magampala. And so like samadhi is a stepping stone. And jhana is just so important in the life of a monk. And that's why I'm making such a lot, saying such a lot about the achievement of jhana. But it's not easy to achieve. But you can achieve it if you put forth the requisite effort. Do it this pansa, do it this wasa, do it this time. If you can do it now in this wasa, then your monastic life would have had some result, some goal. It can be, you can have some self-respect and pride as a monk. As they say in the 10 recollections of one gone forth, at the end of one's life, if asked by your fellow monks, have you achieved any Uttari Manusa Dhamma worthy of one who's gone forth? Will you be able to answer that yes, I have achieved a jhana, or I have achieved one of the stages of enlightenment? So if you cannot answer in the affirmative just before you die, then perhaps one will conclude that one's life as a monk has been wasted. Or at least, one has made merit, but not much more. And if one really wishes to make merit as a monk, you should go to a monk and do some building, or set up a monastery, or do some teaching, go to Melbourne or somewhere. Then you can make a lot of merit that way. But if you've chosen the superior way, then at least make sure you succeed in it. If this is the way you've chosen to get jhana, to get Magunpala, succeed in it. Otherwise, at the end of your life, you may think it would have been better if you'd have built a monastery. So that is a little talk of hopefully trying to encourage, inspire, and somehow point the way. At this time during the rains retreat, almost halfway through, please keep the effort going. Please keep the aspiration clear and pure. Don't, I know that there's one layperson, Anagarika, I forget it was a year ago or 2 years ago, he came here and he asked me, said, in this monastery, so he said, I want a straight answer and an honest answer. Can one attain jhana in this monastery? Can one attain Magunpala in this monastery? I answered in the affirmative, yes, and he became inspired. Then he put forth a lot of effort into meditating for 2 weeks. And the rest of the time he spent in the library or in his hut with books, reading, I don't know, translating, doing things. Be careful of that. Don't give in and get into other projects. Translating, doing overmuch reading. Keep the main purpose of this rains retreat, the achievement of jhana, the achievement of Magunpala. Everything else is secondary. You can read books, but make sure that you're reading books to support the practice of jhana, to support the arising of Magunpala. One can do services around the monastery, just like sweeping the paths or cleaning the toilets, but do this to support the arousing of jhana, to support Magunpala, and do it with mindfulness. Do it with a sense of this has to be done in a monastery. Someone has to do it. Now it's my turn. When it's not my turn, I don't have to be concerned with these things. I can put forth extra effort. Whatever you do during this rains retreat, do it for one of these two purposes and not any other purpose. The achievement of jhana, the achievement of Magunpala. And then you'll find the effort, energy, aspiration will come up. When the mind is trained, as it says in the suttas, it will not leap towards the kilesas or towards karma. Again, karma, kelong ama, the world of sensuality. It will leap towards the dhamma, it will leap towards the nimitta of jhana. It will leap towards the recollection of anicca, dukkha, anatta. It will leap towards these things because it's been conditioned and trained to do so. You can train the mind. It's hard work, but it can be done. So please put forth effort. And at the end of this rains retreat, may you all be able to say, I have achieved a jhana. Well, I achieved a Magunpala. Why not? That's an hour's talk. Has anyone got any questions or comments on what I've been saying this evening? You've heard it all before, it's just to encourage and help condition extra effort, extra diligence. Especially watch those thoughts in the mind and resist them, say no to them if they are unwholesome.
Amen.